Chop Talk is brought to you by the Kosho School of Karate's premium martial arts training equipment. Frustrated with the low quality of the big manufacturers, the hassle and expense of custom-made equipment, or the months-long delivery times offered by the Japanese brands, if your order ever arrives at all? Kosho offers makiwara, iron sandals, specialty punching bags, and other premium martial arts training equipment, all at great prices and great delivery times. Kosho equipment is guaranteed to be high quality and heavy duty, exactly what serious traditional martial artists demand. Contact the Kosho School of Karate for more information. Go to www.koshoequip.com or email koshoschoolofkarate@gmail.com. Kosho, premium martial arts training equipment for the serious martial artist. Hey everybody, welcome back to Chop Talk. I'm your host, Nate England. Wherever you listen to the show, please write a review and give us a 5-star rating. Also, be sure to check out the photos from this week's show on Facebook. This week, Peter Boylan joins a show from Detroit, Michigan. Peter is a longtime practitioner of Judo, Iaido, and Jodo. Peter is the author of a weekly blog, The Budo Bum, and he just released a great new book based on his blog, Musings of a Budo Bum. In the show, Peter and I talk about how he got started in the martial arts, his experiences training and living in Japan, the meaning of kata, and of course we hit some of the topics he covers in the book. You can find out more about Peter Boylan on his blog at www.budobum.blogspot.com, and you can also find his book, Musings of a Budo Bum, on Amazon. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the show. And today's guest is my good friend, Peter Boylan. How you doing, Peter?
Real good, Nate. Thanks for having me.
Great. Well, hey, really, really appreciate you doing the interview. We've been trying to get it, work out the schedule for, I think, a couple months now, and we finally did. So I'm glad that it worked out. For starters, just so that everybody in the audience gets to know who you are, could you start by telling us a little bit about your background, how you got into the martial arts, what martial arts you study?
Okay. Well, I got into all of this actually when I was about 15, and I was at summer camp, and the counselor loaned me his copy of The Tao of Pooh to read.
Okay, The Tao of
Pooh. Got me interested in, yes, The Tao of Pooh.
Okay.
Which got me interested in Chinese philosophy.
All right.
And from there, I was looking for something that embodied Chinese philosophy, and I really wanted to do Tai Chi.
Mm-hmm.
But this was the Midwest in the 1980s.
Now, you're in Detroit now. Is that where you grew up also?
Yes, I grew up in Detroit.
Great.
So there was not much around that I could find.
Right.
But when I got to college, they at least had a judo class. So in college, I started taking judo classes.
Okay.
And really, really got into that. Really enjoyed it. It was a great group. We trained 4 or 5 times a week and had a great time.
Sounds great. Now, the jump between so you're interested in the Chinese philosophy, but then you jumped into the Japanese judo. Did you even know the difference at that point, or were you just looking for anything?
I knew there was a difference, but I didn't really know what it was that was different about them.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking for anything, and judo was what I found.
And judo was there. That's great.
Yeah. And at the same time, I started taking Chinese religion and philosophy classes at college, and they were taught by a guy whose specialty was actually Japanese religions. And he was really good, so I started taking all of his classes.
Sure.
And I ended up majoring in comparative religions, actually, and was thinking about getting a PhD, as I was finishing up college, I looked into going to Japan.
Okay.
To get the language skills.
Now, had you been studying Japanese language in school also, or were you sticking mainly to the Eastern religions?
Well, I was doing the Eastern religions. They didn't offer Japanese until my last year at college.
Mm.
So I had 2 semesters of Japanese as I was applying for positions in Japan.
Great. And the positions... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I went down to the International Studies office, and they said, we've got a bunch of different programs. This one's $8,000, this one's $9,000, this one's $10,000 a year. And then there's this new thing called the JET program. You go and teach in the schools in Japan. And after 4.5 years of college, as a broke student, I looked at them and said, pay or be paid?
That's a novelty, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you can upgrade from the instant ramen noodles to the actual ramen noodle stand. That's a big improvement.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Right.
And to my shock, they took me. They liked me. I had very little Japanese. I mean, I had about one semester of Japanese when I interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
And two semesters when I got over there. So not a whole lot.
So you're at the Japanese language was very beginner level, or were you able to pick it up quickly? Some people can just suck that up like a sponge. I am not one of them.
I am not one either. It's an effort.
It is.
And almost 30 years later, I'm still studying it, still trying to get it right.
All right. Well, you must have done okay, because just a quick jump ahead here, which is you were actually the translator for a book I have been using as a reference for years, more than a decade, which is Jodo by, you know, I got my book here and
Yone no and Hiroi. Yeah.
There it is. I was looking for the names and they're on the inside, which is a fantastic book on Joe, and it's been a great reference, not just for me, but I think there's a bunch of people out there. So
it is a nice reference. They did a really good job when they put that together.
And you did a great job translating it into English. So, you know, your Japanese
That was a labor of love.
Yeah. So that wasn't one that helped buy the ramen?
No.
Right, so
no, they gave me some comp copies.
Well, that's good. That's nice.
Yeah.
So when you were accepted to the JET program, were you able to pick where you wanted? Could you request? I tried to apply through the JET and NOVA, and I wanted to wind up in Okinawa. And they flat out told me, you are going to go where we say you're going to go, and that's the only place you're going to go. And I said, no thanks. Do you have a better luck or better experience with that?
Yeah, when I applied, they said, we can't guarantee that you can go where we can put you where you request, but we would try.
Mm.
And I thought about it, and I thought, well, I want to be near Kyoto, but everybody's going to be asking for Kyoto, I thought.
Right.
So I put down rural Kyoto.
Mm.
And they gave it to me.
Oh, that's Shiga
is pretty much rural Kyoto.
That's fantastic. What was the town again?
I was in Yokkaichi.
Yokkaichi. I don't know. I spent some time there. I was on a summer studio program when I was in architectural school, and we spent basically 6 weeks in and around Kyoto, looking at all the different temples and the architecture.
Oh,
and
nice!
It was definitely the older. It was not contemporary Japanese architecture. It was the classical, of course.
Classical, yeah.
And Kyoto is the best place to go for that, and you know that you lived there.
Oh yeah, yeah. Kyoto is marvelous for that.
Absolutely,
they've done a really good job of preserving so much of it.
Yeah, they really have. In fact, one of the main temples that's closer to the downtown area was shut down, and they had shut it down for something like 3 or 4 years for a renovation and a rehab. So we didn't get to visit that one, and I can't recall the name. But everything else was great. Sanju Sangendo, I described it as the Buddha bleachers. There's a building that's about 100 yards long, and there's 1,001 life-size Buddha in there. That was amazing. That's what I did my final project on.
Okay.
And well, I mean,
it takes forever just to walk through and appreciate them all.
Yeah, you can't really appreciate them all. You have to kind of pick out one. I think they said you try to find the one that looks like you, and I don't know if any of them looked like me. But so you've had the judo experience when you arrived in Kyoto. So you're obviously interested in the martial arts. You'd started. Did you jump right into it while you were there, or how did it come?
Yeah, I jumped right into judo when I arrived. It was one of the best things. There was so much that was culture shock for me, but in the dojo, felt like home. Mm. Because the rules were the same, the etiquette was the same. We had used all the Japanese terminology in the dojo, so that was all the same. So I got to Japan speaking fluent judo.
That's exactly right, which is great in the dojo, but you can't carry on a conversation. Right.
No, you can't carry on a conversation about anything except judo.
Right, and I was the same way with karate. I can go Murote Impiate, Sekinzuki, and you know, the waiter's looking at me going, I don't know what the hell you want.
Yes, and when I was studying Japanese in Japan, I had all of these terms from judo, and I kept trying to use them in a general way, and finding out that, no, that's very specific terminology just for judo.
Right.
Because I'd say something and the teacher would look at me like I was nuts.
I found the same way. And also I found that I would know specific bizarre anatomical names that weren't even used in, like, suigetsu. Who the hell knows that suigetsu is solar plexus? And there's other ones you've dealt with that.
Uto and different kyusho points and whatnot that you pick up, and nobody knows these.
Sure.
So obscure Chinese medicine.
Right. So you're there doing judo. How did you find the sword and the jo and everything else that you're into?
Well, I'd been there about a year, a little over a year, and I was riding my bike home from getting my hair cut. Mm. And there was this, as I was riding, there was a guy grinding something on the biggest grinding wheel I'd ever seen.
Okay.
And I stopped to watch for a moment. And just about the time I realized that he was grinding a sword.
Huh.
Like, but you can't have swords in Japan. You're not allowed to have swords in Japan.
Right.
No weapons in Japan.
Right.
And he looked up and signaled just a minute, and then he cleaned up what he was doing and then invited me into his house.
Huh.
And we had tea, and he became one of my best friends.
Wow.
Nakagawa-sensei.
That's fantastic. Now, did he speak English, or were you guys...
We were struggling along with my Japanese.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, I'd been there a little over a year at that point, so my Japanese was functional. It's still not beautiful, but it was at least functional, and I keep working on it.
Sure. So did he practice Iaido cutting, or was he the swords? He's doing the sharpening, so is he the swordsmith?
He was a swordsmith.
Oh, okay.
He was doing the basic... the basic shaping of the blade, cleaning it up enough to send it off to a polisher.
Very interesting.
Yeah. And from that, I got very interested in swords, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that to really appreciate them, I should understand how they're used. So I sought out a Iaido teacher.
Oh, great. And now, in the U.S., it's tough. It's been tough. For me, I studied some Iaido in Japan. You've obviously been doing it much longer, but the Iaido people are so few and far between here. But in Japan, there's clubs, there's groups, basically in every town.
Yeah, pretty much every town has them. And I found a small club in the next town over from me.
Oh, nice. So
15 minutes away, two stops up the train, and I was there.
That's pretty convenient. Now, did anybody on the train look at you weird when you're riding back and forth with your sword?
Well, this was the middle of nowhere in the early 1990s. They looked at me strange no matter what I did.
That's true.
The next gaijin was in the next town.
And he had been sent over by the JET program also. Every town gets like one, right? Yeah.
Yes. At that point, every town got one. Now I think they get two or three, but yeah.
Right. Now, did you run into any issues while you were there? People not wanting to accept you into the dojo or anything like that? Or was it pretty much open arms?
I had been very worried about that. Mm. But when I approached the kata sensei, I found out later that the only thing I needed to worry about was him chaining me to the door so that a student couldn't escape.
So he was happy to have somebody there no matter where they're from.
Exactly. He was absolutely thrilled.
That's great. That's a fantastic attitude. So, you know, no wonder you stuck with him. That's great.
He was absolutely wonderful.
Now, this group that was doing Eido, did they also do a little bit of Joe, or did you bump into somebody else, like making a Joe out of a branch in the front yard? Or?
Well, not quite that prosaic, but I was at a EI practice, and one of the senpai was doing something with a stick in the corner, and I looked at that, and I thought, yeah, I want to do that. Mm. And so she introduced me to her teacher, and I started doing Joe.
Great.
Along with the EI.
That's great. And was there a dojo pretty close to where you're living?
That dojo was a little bit further. I had to go, like, it was about half an hour.
Now,
but not bad.
A lot of people, even in Japan, don't know what Jodo is. It's not a very well-known martial art, even in Japan.
True.
And I would have, people would ask me when I was living in Japan, people would ask me what you're doing. I said, well, I'm studying karate, and I'm studying this, and I'm also studying Jodo. And they would say, I don't know Jodo. You mean you study Judo? And I said, no, I mean Jodo. And they said, ah, you are silly foreigner.
I know that story well.
You mean you go to dojo? And I said, no, I'm studying Jodo. And they, I don't know it, you know. So you had to run into the same thing, right?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
And my response would be, when they said, no, you mean Judo, I'd say, no, I do Judo too.
Right.
This is Jodo.
Right.
And they'd look at me like I had a second head, and I'd say, no, tsue no jo. And they'd be like, tsue no jo, tsue. Oh, the kanji for stick. Okay.
Right, stick. Exactly. That's what you got to tell them. Tsue, tsue. And then they kind of get it, maybe.
Maybe, yes. Right. They know that you're doing something with a stick at least.
Right. That's great. So how long were you in Japan in total? For that?
About 7 years.
That's a long time. About what year did you move back to the U.S.?
Well, I moved to Japan the first time in 1990, and I was there until the summer of 94.
Okay.
And we moved back to the... And during that time, I got married and had a kid.
Mm.
And then we moved back to the U.S. so I could work on my master's degree. Mm-hmm. And we were in the U.S. for 2 years. And then we moved back to Japan because by that time we had two daughters and we wanted them to speak Japanese as natives.
Sure.
So we moved to Japan for a couple of years to make sure they picked it up.
That's great. And that's
we were living with my in-laws, though. So that was a little stressful on my wife.
Not you, though?
It was stressful on me, but the problem was that for her, she was caught between her mother and me.
Oh, okay.
Neither of us would complain about the other one directly.
So you're complaining directly to your wife?
Yes. And my mother-in-law would complain about me to my wife, and she was caught in the middle, and it was tough on her.
Ah, that's too bad. So she was ready to either get your own apartment or get back to the U.S.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but that's
at that point, I needed to get a job.
Right. But it's such an advantage for your kids to be able to speak both language fluently from a young age. I am so jealous of the people that have that opportunity because, you know, I'm living over there. I'm taking Japanese lessons even now, and it's such a struggle. Whereas, you know, your daughters and other people, my friends' kids.
Yeah, they picked it up naturally.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
Yeah. My oldest daughter, I mean, obviously she spoke Japanese as a native, but she spoke household Japanese and whatnot. So she studied Japanese in college to expand her vocabulary. And she had her professor was like, "Oh, well, I expect you to do more work because you're already at this level."
So I was going to say she didn't just take Japanese to get an easy A, because that wouldn't be a bad strategy either.
It would have been nice, but no, she tried that. She tried to sign up for first-year Japanese, and they kicked her out of the class.
Ah, that's too bad. That's a pretty good plan, though. Looking for a way to gain an edge on the competition? Want to give your body some much-needed relief and relaxation? Try Medical Resort ATAC, Okinawa's specialist in sports therapy and wellness care. ATAC offers customizable massage therapy. Try their oxygen chamber to increase metabolism, reduce fatigue, and promote faster recovery from injuries. Take their stretching course to increase flexibility and release muscle fatigue. ATAC also offers special courses in static and thermal therapy, foot therapy, and head therapy. Or try a session of ATAC's latest offering, acupuncture therapy, with their fully licensed acupuncture therapist. Want to find out more? ATAC is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Stop into their center located at 12830 Oroku in Naha City, Okinawa. Call 098-859-1890 or visit them on the web at www.a-tac.net. That's www.a-tac.net. Staff is fluent in English, Portuguese, Spanish, and Japanese. We've been talking about your background, but I want to jump to what's going on now, which is you just released a book, Musings of a Budo Bum, and I read it, and man, this is a good book.
Thank you.
It's not a technical book, so you're not going to go in here and find out how to necessarily do the right technique, but it's more about the philosophy and the background, the mindset you need to have when you're studying martial arts. And
yes, and
I think it's great. There's stuff in here that I've thought about as a guy who's practiced martial arts for 20 years, but I think this is really good for somebody who is starting martial arts also, so they can understand what it is they're getting into.
And that was kind of my target, is someone who's doing martial arts but doesn't have the opportunity to go to Japan and study there.
Right. Well, now, what are the differences that you found? So you had the judo training in the U.S. You went to Japan, you know, back and forth off and on for 7 years, and you've been back to the U.S. What are the big differences that you have found between training in the two countries?
The mats are much softer in the U.S. but besides the fact that they use tatami until they're compacted to the consistency of concrete in Japan,
right?
The teaching is, there's much more responsibility for the learning on the student in Japan.
Mm.
The teachers are there, they will demonstrate things, but they're not necessarily going to break it down for you into component pieces and explain the whole thing. You have to really work at getting what they're giving you.
Right.
I had to really learn to see technique in Japan in a way that I didn't have to in the U.S.
And, you know, part of that is I think there's a different mindset where in Japan, it's I think when people start, they're thinking a little bit more long term. So there's not necessarily as big of a rush to get to a certain level or get to a certain rank. It's a little bit more about the process.
The whole, I mean, so much of Japanese culture is kata based, not just martial arts. There is a kata for how you drive your car. There are katas for all sorts of regular behaviors. There is a proper form for doing it. And so people come in to start the arts thinking about, okay, there's a proper form and there's a proper way to do it, and you refine that. And they don't, it's not a term, okay, I'm going to learn this kata, and then I'll learn this kata, and then I'll learn that kata, boom, 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 in order. And it's not like knocking down the items. It's, you learn a kata, and you know that you're going to keep learning new things about the kata, and keep discovering new things, and keep refining it for decades.
Yeah, absolutely. You had some similar things in the book to this, but I was one day I was working out when I was living in Okinawa with Shinzato Sensei, who's a well-known karate instructor. And I go into the dojo one day, and he goes, "Ah, Nate, I just realized something about Wansu." And I'm like, "Oh, that's great, Sensei." He's like, "I wish I had known this when I was in my 20s, but I just realized it now. But at least I got it." And so you're not going to learn everything right away. It might take 40 or 50 years to really master and really understand everything about what you're doing.
Yes. And that expectation is clear in Japan, and it's really not in the United States.
And not
A lot
just.
of people look at it and say black belt is a terminal point, and in Japan it's a beginning point.
Yeah, absolutely. People are looking very much in the mindset, black belt is my goal. I'm going to get to black belt. And that's one of the major dropout points for karate guys. I'm not sure about you're a little bit more
Also
than
for judo.
for judo. Okay, so same thing. They have this goal in mind of getting my black belt, and then they think they've mastered it all, and they haven't. I mean, my God, I have learned so much more from the time I got my black belt to now than I did up until I got my black belt. It's not even close.
Yes. I'm still correcting, and I'm still fixing things that I learned wrong on my way to my black belt.
Yeah, you develop some bad habit, and if you don't fix it soon enough, then you're struggling with it 20 or 30 years later. It's frustrating. It's frustrating.
I've just learned to bend my knees enough for Seoi
Just now, and you have 30, 40 other throws that you have a little tweak to make too, also.
Yes.
Well,
Yeah.
with the kata, one of the complaints is people think that they call it too fixed or it's not about real fighting. But that's not, I don't think that's exactly accurate.
It's not real fighting, because it's about teaching the things you need for real fighting. I mean, in the kata, you're learning about spacing and timing and good structure and movement, all these things that you need to really understand it for a fight, but they're not things that you're going to learn by fighting.
And another thing, I want to run this by you. I've had a theory, and since your Japanese is pretty darn good, and you're thinking about these
Thank
things
you.
also, so kata, everybody always translates it as form. So I'm going to run this form. That's the standard translation, right?
Yes.
I found it in martial arts, especially Okinawan martial arts. But I mean, it's also in judo. There's a lot of dual meaning where one movement, it's not doesn't have to necessarily be interpreted as one thing. There could be 5 or 10 or 100 different things. Jodo's interesting
Yeah, it's
because,
very dense.
yes. And Jodo's interesting because there always seems to be sort of a redundancy, even in the basic katas. You're doing a strike to the wrist, but you could have hit him on the head on the way down, or it could have been a thrust if he came in. There's always this sort of redundancy or multiple layers.
Yes. Yeah.
Another.
There's many things going on, and yeah.
And, one of the things is another, not the same word or not the same kanji for the kata form is, what do I want to say? Hoho or method.
Yes.
And so, for example, if I brought up Wansu earlier. So if I'm running Wansu, which is a karate kata, you could say Wansu form, or you could say Wansu's method. And Wansu was this old Chinese guy who lived in Okinawa for a while. And that is the way that he fought. That was his style or his method of fighting. Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks. So we were talking about kata and method versus form, and that's where it cut out, and I didn't get any of it.
The meanings are very dense. You have to learn the kanji, and so in Japanese they'll use the terms in an overlapping way: hoho, kata, and the character ho is another character for way of doing things. And so you get michi as a way, you get hoho as way of doing things, and you'll find the character again in heiho, like military ways.
Yeah, okay.
And yeah, in English we think of form as being rigid.
Right.
And in Japanese, it's a much more fluid concept.
Right.
We learn the kata, and then I keep relearning the kata. I learn it, and then I come back to it, and I discover new things in the kata. Sometimes you to understand the kata, you'll break the kata. You'll purposely do something differently to see why that doesn't work or why it is that the kata is set up the way it is. Invariably, when I do that, I find myself staring down the end of the tip of a bokken because I found another way not to do the kata.
Right. But that's great that, it's not so rigid. There's a lot of flexibility even in the kata, especially with something like Jodo, where the timing, the spacing, the intensity of the other person, there's a lot of flexibility even if you have to follow these specific movements.
Yes, and just the difference from person to person. Abe Sensei in Tokyo is a little tiny guy. He's about 5 feet tall. And Morimoto Sensei in Osaka is about 6 feet tall.
Right.
Very different doing the same kata with these two different gentlemen.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're a pretty tall guy, so when you, like for me, I was over there and working. I was working with people that were, basically legally, I think they were midgets. I mean, I think if we got to find the exact cutoff of what was considered a
yeah,
dwarf.
They were very, very short. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You run into people 4.5 feet tall and things, and you have to figure out how to make piccata work for this situation.
Right. And I was dealing with it on the opposite side here, because now I had two guys that joined the dojo and are doing Jodo. With karate, it's, you know, people are all different sizes. There always have been in my training. But all of a sudden, I was training with people that were 3 inches taller than me in Jodo, and it was bizarre. And I had to, you know, I had to think of it as my little short sensei, how he dealt with me. And so it changes. Now, another thing with that you brought up in the book was, you know, even some of these styles or workouts that claim to not be doing kata, they are. Because a training routine, whether it's a boxer, the routine that he uses to hit the heavy bag, or, you know, I can't recall, I think you were talking a little bit about sport judo, where they're looking down on kata, all of a sudden they're doing this thing that looks a whole bunch like kata.
Yeah, you've distilled it out. You're working on a particular pattern, which is another way of reading kata.
Right.
It can be form. It can be a pattern. Think of it as a pattern. And if you think of it as a sewing pattern gives you a basic form for something, and then you have to fit it to the person that you're making the clothing for.
Right. So it has to adjust.
And the same thing in Jo and karate and judo. And just because someone hasn't given a kata a formal name doesn't mean that they're not doing a kata practice.
Right, exactly. And, you know, some of the guys, the karate guys here in the U.S. would kind of jump on that. Like some of the newer forms, especially if they develop something, they would be like, this is not a kata. This is just my exercise. And then, but after they're doing it and their students are doing it and everybody's getting something out of it, you know, at a certain point, I guess it becomes officially becomes a kata, even though the training exercise sort of was to begin with.
Yeah. And that's one of the things, like in judo, there are the official kata of Kodokan judo, but there are a number of other kata sets from judo floating around.
Right. They just haven't become official yet, but people are still using them. They're getting a lot out of them.
Yes, they're still using them. They're still learning. They still get a lot out of it. It's just not part of the official curriculum.
Right, right. Another thing you talked about in the book that I really liked was, I think the chapter was Trust in the Dojo, where you're talking about different people and how they train, and people are coming to the dojo sort of with different backgrounds and different intents. And some of them are good and some of them are bad. But the dojo has to kind of help smooth that out.
Yes. And you have to learn trust in the dojo. And you're training with people. We're giving our partner our body as a training tool. This is especially true in something like judo, where your partner's going to literally pick you up and throw you at the ground.
Absolutely. Or try to break your arm, or try to strangle you until you're unconscious. And
yes.
And if you have somebody in there who can't control that or doesn't care if they control it or not, that's not good for anybody.
That's not good for anybody. And you learn to spot those people very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
I've known people who, outside the dojo, they can mask some of these tendencies, but in the dojo, it comes leaking right out.
Yeah, that's,
if they're a little bit sadistic or something, it becomes obvious very quickly.
Right, and you try to avoid that person. I mean, I remember I was living in California for 6 weeks. So I'm not 6 weeks, 6 months for a job thing once. I was trying to find somewhere to work out, and I happened in this what I thought was a karate school, but they were teaching whatever version of MMA or grappling that the instructors had come up with. And all they had in there was a bunch of hillbillies with no control. And working with those guys, you know, they were all bigger than me and stronger than me. And I knew that if I extended my arm one inch too far, my shoulder was going to come out of the socket. And, you know, I was able to be careful enough. But if you don't spot those people, boy, you could get hurt in a hurry.
Yes. And you have to really watch for them in the dojo, because they can hurt beginners and drive beginners away before they can really begin to be interested in the art.
Right. And it does take another chapter you had was training. The training time isn't just in years, but it's in decades. And
yeah.
And I think it's difficult for a lot of people to even think of it in years. A lot of people, what I found, people that are coming to train with us that are or interested that are contacting us, think that they're going to take 3 or 4 classes and all of a sudden they're going to be Bruce Lee, and that's not the reality. It takes a lot longer than that.
No, these are, you're right. These take a lot of time to polish, even just to get the basics down to the point where you're not tripping over your own feet can take months. The dojo I do judo in has developed a whole set of exercises for teaching new students the footwork and the movement that they're going to need for doing judo.
Mm.
Judo is great because it's already broken down into the kihon, so you can work very carefully on the basic techniques and get those before we throw you into doing kata.
Right. Yeah, you have to do all your basic strikes, and then you go into the kata, and then you work with a partner, and it's sort of step by step. You can work into it.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is Mike Tarvin of Tarvin Plumbing Company. You may have heard me answering questions as a plumbing expert on the Gary Sullivan Show over the years. I'm here today to make you aware of our company. We perform plumbing repairs of all types. We've been in business since 1907 through 5 generations of family members. That's 109 years of providing top quality workmanship and outstanding service. If you're having issues with leaks, stoppages, water heaters, fixtures, or piping, we're here to help. Spring rains may be taking a toll on your sump pump. To help out, ask us about our summer sump pump special. We can inspect the existing pump and replace it if necessary for a special summer price. We can also inspect or add a battery backup and other devices for extra security to keep you high and dry. We offer you peace of mind for your plumbing system with reliable, trustworthy service backed by years of experience. Tarvin Plumbing is a Cincinnati company with an appreciation of the wide range of plumbing challenges this city offers. So if you or someone you know has a need for plumbing repairs of any type, please think of us at Tarvin Plumbing. You can reach us at tarvinplumbing.com. That's tarvinplumbing.com. Thank you.
Well, I've been just, you know, like I said, I really enjoyed the book, and I've been going through. I made notes on some of the different chapters here, and I'm just kind of going through the notes. But can you tell us how the book itself came together?
Well, the book started out as I started by writing a Budo blog, which evolved over time into what it is now.
And just to give people, so people can check it out, and I'll plug this at the beginning and end of the show also, but it's www.budobum.blogspot.com. And I'll put a link up on the Facebook page and the show page also. So
Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I started out trying to write partly to work out ideas for myself. And I got enough positive feedback that I kept doing it and started to work at sharing ideas that I thought were worth thinking about for people who were practicing, say, beginner to intermediate students.
Mm-hmm.
And from when I started to think, I've got enough stuff for a book here, and people were saying, you should do a book. So I went through a couple of years of material and weeded out the worst of the stuff and picked out the articles, the ones that I liked and felt very proud of, felt very good about.
Right.
And put them together and by themes and added introduction sections so that it would all tie together and make sense of the whole book.
Well, I don't think there could have been that much bad stuff to weed out. You probably have enough for a sequel already, I would think. 'Cause,
since the, since I started working on the book, I've done now almost enough for a sequel, yes.
There we go. There's going to be a chapter two coming out. That's fantastic. The blog is great, but it would be difficult for anybody, just because of the format. I don't know how many people will go back and check your blog post from, 2007. But bringing those up and together and editing them is a great way, a great way to present it.
Thank you. Yeah, it seemed like there were some very good, some worthwhile things in there.
Yeah.
And I wanted to keep them fresh and keep them out there and keep the discussion going on them. So the book was a good way to keep that alive.
Absolutely. And you're getting a good reaction, a lot of new people coming in at the blog or interested in what you have to say?
I do get a lot of reaction. People write me on Facebook and things, and fortunately, most of them are saying nice things about me.
See, that's good. And so you tell me if you're the same way. Maybe you're not, maybe you are, but for me, it's very, I'm so wary of any of the martial arts stuff that's either posted online, in any comment section, any YouTube section. There's so much bad out there that I can't watch it. I can't go out there. I can't look at it. And there's no point. Someone is saying something dumb in a comments line. There's not even any point to correcting it because it doesn't go anywhere. It just makes you mad. But with your blog and the book and your info, it's great because everything's actually really well thought out, really well presented. If I had got into your blog sooner, maybe I wouldn't be so disgusted with martial arts on the internet. I mean, it's kind of what I am interested in, what I was looking for and couldn't find.
Yeah. That was another motivation for the blog. There wasn't a lot of discussion about the things that I was interested in that I wanted to talk about. So I'm trying to start discussion often. The blog is meant to be a starting point, a stepping off point for a discussion, rather than just, okay, here's my opinion and everyone should agree with me.
Right. And not just discussion, but an informed discussion. Because I think that the people that are going to find your blog and spend the time to read it and go through it and think about it are hopefully going to have something intelligent to say or some response that's also well thought out. I don't know how many, maybe you're not, I should check your comments section where, someone says, yeah, but Ronda Rousey can kick your ass, dude. Maybe you're getting that, but I think those people aren't going to stay around and have the patience to read through it either.
Yeah. I don't get many from the, many hecklers from the cheap seats.
that's good. So what are you working on now as far as your training, the martial arts? What are you excited about? What are you not excited about? What's going on with your personal training?
What am I excited about? Well, I'm getting ready for my annual trip to Japan.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yay. Yes. I look forward to this all year. And really I'm working on, nailing down, I've in Jodo, I have learned most of the Jodo curriculum well enough to walk through it. But there are lots of things that I have questions about, and now I'm really starting to dig into some of the higher level kata and things.
Oh,
and
wow.
Discover just how little I know.
Right, and there's so much there to get into, and it's... And it's lucky, and you're lucky because you have a great group of people to go back and train with.
Yeah, I have some. There's some really nice people here that I train with on a weekly basis, and sometimes more when our lives work out.
Right.
And it's great to go to Japan. The teachers are, and the senpai in the dojo are wonderful. The scary part is that I've recently reached the level in Japan where I'm one of the seniors in the dojo, no matter how much I try to shirk it.
Yeah, you're more senior than I am. But the last time I went back, there had been a bunch of people that had joined the dojo and started working out after I did. So when I showed up after not being around for even as a couple of years, I'm not able to make it back every year, but every couple of years I am. And I remember there's a couple of people that got upset. Why is this Gaijin standing to my right? And teachers had to explain, no, he started before you. He outranks you. It's okay. You know, and they kind of got it. So what, how long are you going to be in Japan?
2 weeks.
That's a good time. Is it going to be all training? Are you going to do a little sightseeing? You going to hang out with the mother-in-law?
Well, about a week of it is dedicated to training. And I've got to spend a few days visiting my in-laws and get to visit some of my other friends in Japan who aren't martial artists. I do have friends who are not martial artists, amazingly enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, and do some sightseeing. There's some things I want to see in Kyoto that I haven't gotten to yet somehow.
Wow.
And, yeah, but Kyoto's got so much that...
Oh, yeah.
You just keep going.
You could spend a lifetime going to every temple, every shrine, every old building, everything.
Yes.
There's so much.
Very much so. And then I'm going to go up to Tokyo, and I work for a Japanese company. I'm going to spend a few days in the office in Tokyo.
so you can actually write the whole thing off as a business expense.
Yes.
Oh, that's great. See, that's smart. I've learned that from being self-employed. It's like whatever excuse you have, always find an excuse to do something business related. So the whole thing is a write-off. That's it.
Exactly. Yes. Great. Well, that's another benefit of doing books. It's research.
That's true. That's exactly right. And I found the same thing. It's like, hey, IRS, I'm the co-owner of a karate school. You know, this plane ticket to Japan, that's all business related too.
Yeah. I mean, going to Japan to train, that's business related.
It absolutely is. All right, great. Well, is there anything else that we've missed? I'm looking over, I have a ton of notes from your book, but I think I don't want to read line by line. I mean, it's just good. And I would give it away. We talked about everything on the podcast and people wouldn't buy the book. So go get the book. It's good. Go check out the blog. It's good. Anything else we
Thank
missed?
Thank you, yeah. Well, I'm working. I've got another new blog going up on Monday. I just finished.
Nice. What's the topic? So,
this one is about how you should think about approaching training.
Mm.
So it's Budo is an everyday activity. That the idea that your training shouldn't be something special that's cordoned off from the rest of your life. It should be an everyday thing, and it should seep out into the rest of your life.
Oh boy, that's deep because it can go either way. It's very tempting to go into the dojo, and if you've been stressed out at work or with your personal life, sort of bow on to the mat and sort of cut that off. But then, how much can you bring in and go? Oh, but then the other way, it's like all the stuff you're learning. How do you apply that in your everyday life? Interesting.
Exactly. There's a place for both of them, and you need, I mean, we do a lot that separates our training off from the regular world. We go to a very special place to do it. We bow into the dojo. We bow in onto the floor. We put on a special uniform, special costume for doing this. At the end of practice, we bow out, and we take off the special clothes, and we put them away. And if we put away the Budo practice with the clothes, we're not getting much out of it.
Right.
But if we wear the Budo practice out into our lives so that it informs us when we get into an argument in the office or just how we carry ourselves. If it makes us a little bit more compassionate and understanding to other people because we don't have to feel threatened by them.
Right.
All these little things that where it should start showing up outside the dojo.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that's important for people who are outside the martial, or even people inside, we'll just say everybody. It's important for everybody to understand that you get different things out of the martial arts. Yes, it's a way to defend yourself. Yes, it's a great way to exercise. But you can also apply it to, like you said, the way you behave, the way you act, your mindset on a day-to-day basis. And that influence, it switches over time. You know, you might start trying to get in good shape, but it might go to the mental.
Yes. Yeah. And at different times, different things will be important for you in your training and in what it gives you in your everyday life. That ability to go into the dojo and focus and turn your mind, turn off your awareness of whatever is bothering you, once you get that developed enough, that's useful outside with your family or at work. If you've got something going on at work that's bothering you, the ability to focus and put that aside when you go home so that you can be fully there for your family is wonderful. Or vice versa, if you've got an issue going on at home, if you can put that aside when you go to work, you can do your job much better.
Right. Where's the best place to get the book?
Probably Amazon.
And again, it's Musings of a Budo Bum by Peter Boylan. And Peter, thank you very much for being on Chop Talk. I really appreciate it. It's a really fascinating conversation. I think
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it immensely.
Great. I think we could keep talking about all these other topics that you brought up, and it's just all great. It's really well thought out, and it's fantastic, fascinating. I love it.
Thank you very much. I look forward to talking to you the next time we get together.
Absolutely. Looking forward to seeing you in person, and hey, we'll have to do another Chop Talk.
Yes, that would be wonderful.
Okay, that's all for this week's show. Thanks to my good friend Peter Boylan for joining us. If you want to learn more about Peter, please visit his blog at www.budobum.blogspot.com, and also be sure to purchase his book, Musings of a Budo Bum, on Amazon. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Nihiribiru and Mataya. Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.